Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. D.C.'s first elected Attorney General, Carl Racine, will leave office at the end of this year. He didn't run for a third term, and he'll be replaced by Brian Schwab, who was elected earlier this month. But Racine has remained busy since the election. Now, tonight, we're talking to him about several criminal justice issues. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Attorney General Racine, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
It's a great opportunity to be with you again, and I hope your family is well. Harold.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Let's get right into some of the recent headlines. Now, this month, you filed two lawsuits against the Washington Commanders, one alleging team ownership cheated season ticket holders out of their deposits. The other suit alleges that the team, the owner Daniel Snyder, the NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell, deceived D.C. residents about the team's alleged toxic culture and sexual harassment. Now, of course, we know the team has denied the allegations in both suits. First, why not file these lawsuits sooner? And what do you hope will come from these lawsuits?
Sure. I think those are excellent questions. Let me first just tell everybody what the lawsuit is about. You really described it well, but let me add a few things. So in the Washington, in D.C., there's a Civil Consumer Protection Act. That act gives the Attorney General broad discretion to not only regulate, but enforce the law against merchants who sell goods and services to the public. And basically says you've got to tell the truth about important things that matter to D.C. consumers. Of course, D.C. consumers are consumers of the Washington football team, season ticket, merchandise, flags, you name it. And we've, of course, been concerned about the outrageous allegations that we've heard concerning a culture of toxicity really directed against women. And what we've heard from the Washington Commanders, its owner, the NFL, and Roger Goodell is that, number one, from Dan Snyder, hey, he didn't know anything about it. If anything, he was really far removed and too removed from it. I can tell you that our investigation over a year long that included talking to witnesses, including former Washington football team employees, and reviewing over a million documents, revealed that far from not knowing about it, Mr. Snyder participated in it, and our complaint lays it out. Additionally, Mr. Snyder, the football team, the National Football League, and Roger Goodell told the public that it would have an independent investigation so that the public could have confidence in what occurred or didn't occur, and that it would make that investigation public. As you know, Harold, there's been no a publication of the report. We don't even know whether there's a written report. And all the NFL and Mr. Snyder released were seven sentences that essentially found that there was something wrong and that Mr. Snyder is going to pay a little bit of money and then he would go away for maybe 6 months and then come back as the owner. Here's the deal. That wasn't an honest and open and full telling of the truth, nor was it an investigation that was revealed to the public. And so we are empowered to go after those lies. And right now, our lawsuit is about accountability. There has been no accountability. Mr. Snyder first wanted to investigate himself, and then the NFL said, no, let us do it. That's not accountability. Accountability comes from a true independent investigator who can bring a complaint like we did, and we can let the judge sort out the facts.
The case about the suit, I should say, about season ticket holders, that is a little more complex. Could you explain that exactly?
Sure.
I'm not so sure that's easy for a lot of people to understand. Everyone understands allegations of a toxic workplace. They understand sexual harassment. That's not hard to understand. But the season ticket holder case is a little confusing.
Well, let me try to break that down. Again, you asked the question earlier that I didn't get to, and that is why now?
Yeah.
Well, we don't bring lawsuits until they've been fully investigated. And had the matter not been fully investigated before my term, I would not have brought the lawsuit. You don't, if you're cooking, we just finished a holiday, you don't take the turkey out before it's cooked. And the cooking process of an investigation means that you leave no stone unturned. And that's what we did. And here's the deal. In Washington, D.C., you can't lie to consumers to enrich yourself and get away with it. No one, not even Dan Snyder, the NFL, the team, and the league, is above the law. Now, let me talk about the ticket problem. Here's the deal. In order to purchase significant tickets from the Washington football team, dating back to 1998, what you needed to do was make a commitment. And the commitment also entailed paying a security deposit. We all have experience with security deposits. Most of us do when we're renting an apartment or something of that sort. The terms of the security deposit for those who purchase tickets was that once their relationship with the team was over, for example, as you know, a lot of ticket holders have refused to continue to go to the games. Then, according to the deal, the money that you gave for the security deposit would be returned within 30 days of termination of the contract. Here, what we found, rather shockingly and brazenly and greedily, is that Mr. Snyder and the football team had a practice of not returning the security deposit for years. And then finally, when people would say, wait a second, where's my security deposit? The team and Mr. Snyder would interpose barriers to the return of the security deposit. Hey, send us a signed copy of X, Y, and Z in order to get your money back. Well, that wasn't the deal. And so, again, when merchants in the District of Columbia lie to consumers, that's against the law. And our office will investigate and bring suit, and Dan Snyder and no one else is above the law.
Let's see. I am talking to D.C. Attorney General Carl Racine. He will be leaving office at the end of this year. We'll have a new attorney general who was elected earlier this year, but we are talking about all kinds of law and order issues related to the District of Columbia. If you have a comment or if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. One of the other issues that has a lot of D.C. residents concerned, of course, is crime. Over the past several years and even earlier this year, as you know, there have been some political jabs between the mayor's office and your office and the police department and your office, the mayor's office, blaming your office and also other members of the D.C. judiciary for putting violent criminals back on the street after they were arrested. And there's also even been, and I'm sure you've heard the criticism about your office being soft on juvenile crime. As you leave office, what are your thoughts about, first of all, about putting violent criminals back on the street? Do you believe you bear any responsibility for that? And because the regular D.C. residents, I think I can speak, generally, folks are just, they're just fed up with the violent crime, no matter who's to blame.
Harold, I think you said it best right there. First of all, my heart goes out to any victim of crime. And if you talk to victims, and if you talk to the most respected victims' rights organizations in the District of Columbia, what they will tell you is their consistent friend is the Office of Attorney General. You made a point about scapegoating. You didn't use that term. You said that the mayor's office, the police, blame prosecutors, blame the judges. You know, here's the deal. It's not unlike just being on a playground. You know that fellow young person back in the day who's always blaming someone else for a problem? Most of the time, that person who's blaming someone else is seeking to absolve themselves and distract from their own responsibility. Let me explain. As you know, when it comes to young people and crime, that, of course, is serious. We don't want our young people hurting other young people or adults at all. We want our young people in school. We want our young people engaged in positive activities, and we want them to have a bright and peaceful future. Young people come into the prosecutor's office, my office, after they've been accused of a crime or after they have been involved in wrongdoing. What the blame game folks conveniently try to evade is their responsibility for what happened well before the young person got into trouble and may have hurt or even killed someone. That's point number one. Point number two, in fact, in crime, and I know, Harold, you care about the facts, young people are held accountable by the Office of Attorney General. We can show our prosecutorial rates and put them up against any prosecutor in the country. But I want to tell you another point. In juvenile justice, it's different from adults. You get to hold young people accountable, but you also are statutorily required, I am, to help rehabilitate a young person. That's because the law has always viewed children as different than adults. And so that's what we do. We hold young people accountable, and you better believe it. We do everything we can to ensure that they don't make the wrong choice and hurt public safety again. And Harold, if I can,
sure.
I want to put this in context. Juvenile crime in the District of Columbia is about 7% of the crime that occurs in Washington, D.C., which is to say that 93% of the crime, including violent crime, is committed by adults. I don't prosecute those adults. How come the blame and scapegoaters are focusing on the children prosecutor and not the other 93%.
So let me ask
you. So I'm happy to take responsibility. And you know that the Office of Attorney General doesn't have jurisdiction over adults. And you know that crime and politicians is a fraught marriage. People use crime to scare people and to get reelected.
Well, let me ask you very quickly, because I've got to take a break in about a minute or so. We've got some calls I want to take as well. Who is responsible, in your opinion, for the youth crime and the adult crime, the rise in youth and adult crime in the District of Columbia? I mean, whose fault is it?
So, you know, as you know, Harold, there is no silver bullet. I wish I could identify a single cause or maybe a single person. And then we would be able to nip the problem in the bud. Crime in the District of Columbia, particularly around kids, is caused by what? Poverty, hopelessness, community violence, trauma, the availability of guns, and familial instability and dysfunction. That's what creates issues and problems with kids.
Okay. I'm talking to Carl Racine, D.C. Attorney General. He's leaving office at the end of this year. We're going to take a break in a little bit, but I wanted to remind our listeners, do not hang up if you are on the phone. That includes Kevin calling from D.C. We also have Cynthia calling from Southeast D.C. We are going to take your phone calls. I'm also on the other side going to talk to the Attorney General about some of the slumlord cases that he has pursued, and also what did he leave undone that he wanted to do. 202-319-7810. This is the Insight segment on the Daily Drum. Stay with us. We will continue in just a minute. And don't forget, you can download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. We'll be back with this conversation in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking to outgoing D.C. Attorney General Carl Racine, leaving office after two terms. In the fall, he is D.C.'s first elected Attorney General. I want to go to the phone lines. Let me talk to Kevin. Kevin calling from D.C. Kevin, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, how you doing? Well, I heard you all talking about the Washington Commandments earlier about, you know, how you can't lie to the consumer. I was just wondering, is it legal, because I'm a consumer, I live in Washington, D.C., and when I go to use, like, my debit card in the stores, you know, they charge, like, an extra 25 cent or 50 cent. Is that legal to pass those charges on to the consumer, I assume, for using that machine that the people have in the store, the debit card machine?
Hey, Kevin, thank you so much for that question. And to be sure, there is a lot of scamming going on in the financial services industry. All you need to do is look at, you know, the carnage that occurred over the last several weeks with Bitcoin. And in regards to consumers and banking services, the truth is that consumers pay very, very high fees for the convenience of their cards, particularly when they're using them in those kinds of convenience stores and that kind of thing. I've had to pay those as well. Do me a favor. There is a law in the District of Columbia that caps the allowable interest rate to 24%. It's called usury in the law. If you call 202-442-9828, give us your particular circumstance, we can tell you whether or not they've been straight up with you. The other thing is that financial services company and ATM machines and the like, they have to tell you, disclose to you what their fees are. Oftentimes, I'm like some other people. I don't read it. I just need the money. Sometimes that's not the wisest thing for us to do, to go to use those kinds of machines. So give us a call, 202-442-9828.
Okay, Kevin, thank you so much for your phone call. Cynthia, calling from Southeast D.C. Cynthia, thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Cynthia, are you there? Cynthia, give us a call back if you can. Jason, calling from D.C., thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Jason? Are you there? Guess we lost them. Let me go back to the questions that I have for you. One of the things that we've seen a lot of during your time in the Attorney General's office is your pursuit of slumlords. There was a case about a month or so ago regarding housing vouchers, one of the, if not the biggest case of its kind in the country. The other cases, the Congress Heights apartment case, where for years the residents living in the apartment complex east of the river had been living in just deplorable conditions. I don't want to so much go into these specific cases, but just from your perspective, why was this happening so much in D.C.? I mean, this seemed to be like just knocking down, you know, the ducks in a carnival sideshow for, you know, for your office. It just seems that every time we turned around, you were able to file a case against a slumlord. What's going on with that?
So let me break it down really simply. Longtime Washingtonians and those who, you know, live in the Washington, D.C. area, you know, even as north as your great town or where your parent lives in Baltimore, right, Harold?
Well, I live in Baltimore, but my my father and stepmother, up until their passing this year, lived in Brookland. And so...
Respect.
Yeah.
Much respect.
Thank
much
you.
Much respect. So everyone in D.C. knows that the pricing around housing is, you know, completely and totally unaffordable. The common denominator with the suits that we brought versus Congress Heights, and that was a suit against a private slumlord, Darrow, that's the suit that you cited, the largest ever fine for housing discrimination in the United States of America, $10 million, and our aggressive action against a D.C. agency called the D.C. Housing Authority, is that the victims are vulnerable. They are overwhelmingly not well-to-do, black, brown, retired, and disabled. And they may not be able to defend themselves. And so what happens is that folks looking to make more than a dime make it off the backs of vulnerable residents. And so the Office of Attorney General has stood up every day to stand up for those vulnerable people. And here's what I want to say to district residents. D.C. has the highest level of intense displacement. And you know that just by looking at who's living in whose neighborhood now and who lived there 20, 30 years ago. I'm not against gentrification. That happens, and I welcome my neighbors. But intense displacement is the product of public policy and a government that is ignoring vulnerable residents. When they violate the law, we come down on them. And that's a good day in the Office of Attorney General.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you think that your pursuit of slumlords is that a warning shot for others, or do you believe that
yes.
Now that you are leaving office, that you know, the new Attorney General, certainly he may have his own agenda, his own you know, criminal fighting agenda, and that may not be one of them.
Well, look, you're right. When there's a new attorney general, that attorney general, you know, ran on a promise to the public. And I know Brian Schwab, who I endorsed, talked a lot about continuing the aggressive work to protect vulnerable residents. So I certainly expect him to do what he said. And as a D.C. resident, as you know, I'm not shy. I'm going to hold people accountable for standing up and being consistent with their words and treating everyone fairly. Here's what people are missing in the District of Columbia. The government at the highest levels, including folks responsible for oversight at the city council, are turning a blind eye all too often when vulnerable people are in need of help. They're doing it because, frankly, the donor community, including developers, not every developer's evil, but there are some who only care about money, are the ones backing their races. We care, the Office of Attorney General, about vulnerable residents, and we're going to always care about that. There are career lawyers here and professionals in the Office of Attorney General who are going to continue to do that work. And if that work for some reason ceases, my guess is that, you know, they'll seek other jobs.
Hmm. What are you going to do after January 2nd, after the inauguration of the new AG?
Oh, I'm going to wish him the best of luck.
Okay. I'll have a chance to talk to him, but I'm talking about you in particular. What are you going to do?
Yeah, so what I'm going to do is, like I said, wish Brian best of luck. I'm going to thank D.C. residents for the opportunity of a lifetime to serve a city that raised me up. And I'm going to advocate for vulnerable residents. I will be reentering the private sector. I have not decided where I'm going to work, but I can guarantee you every last breath in my body, I will be fighting for vulnerable residents.
Do you regret not running for mayor?
I think so much can be done with a mayor who has a heart for public service and a capacity to implement sound and good policy that treats people fairly, especially vulnerable residents. I wish that I could have confidence in that seat that is occupied currently by the two-time mayor, soon to be three-time mayor. I do not. I chose to not run because of the personal things that go into that kind of decision. And I hope D.C. residents understand the power and the budget, nearly $20 billion. They should ask, where's that money going? Why is the Department of Forensic Services, the lab that processes all the evidence, why have they been disaccredited and shut down twice in the last 8 years while people in office are blaming someone else for crime? My call is, get involved, D.C. This is your city.
You sound like you're still on the campaign stump. Are you saying no to running for mayor down the road?
You know, all I can do is decide what I'm doing next in the immediate term. I don't know what is down the road, but I do know, as I said, in addition to working really hard in my private capacity, you better believe that I'm going to be watching and I'm going to be encouraging excellent leaders to run for office and do the right thing by vulnerable people.
You've done a lot in the two terms that you've held, and certainly it is a marked accomplishment to be the first elected attorney general for the District of Columbia, and for those who don't know or did not.
Can I say something, Harold?
Well, I was just going to say that people say that before that, the AG was appointed by the mayor. But yes, please go right ahead.
So you anticipated where I was going.
Not really, but go ahead. I was going to say something else, but please go right ahead.
Okay. It is so important in the District of Columbia to have truly independent offices that are, and I happen to be independent and elected. By being independent and elected, I'm able to do things for vulnerable residents and show my work and the work of my extraordinary colleagues. Nothing gets done without exceptional colleagues, and we need more independence in the District of Columbia. The other point is, while it is an accomplishment to get elected, that's elective success. The Office of Attorney General is about governance. And we are not only proud to have been the first and second elected attorney general, we're proud to be viewed for years as the premier office of attorney general of any state, because D.C. should not have agencies disaccredited and shut down. It should have agencies that are number one.
Let me ask you this before I let you go. Is there anything that you wanted to do that you weren't able to do while you were in office? Projects, initiatives, any entity that you wanted to go after that you weren't able to?
Yes, a lot. I think we have a problem in the District of Columbia with, honestly, corruption. And as we talked about earlier, the Office of Attorney General has exclusive jurisdiction over juveniles. People love to blame children, and they should when they commit wrong and hurt people for wrongdoing, and they call for accountability. How about adult accountability, especially in regards to government? And so let's talk about the department, D.C. Housing Authority. That's where the former board chair gave out a contract, about $5 million, to his partner. And the entire, that's his, person he was dating. The entire board, or the majority of the board, appointed by the mayor, approved of it. I can say to you that in my 8 years of District of Columbia government, I have seen corruption, lack of performance, and a complete lack of accountability in governance. And D.C. residents deserve better.
I guess I'll have to let that be the final word. D.C. Attorney General Carl Racine, thank you so much for spending some time time with us. And good luck to you after January 2nd. We appreciate your time.
I'm always have 96.3 on.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. That is the Daily Drum for this Monday, November 28th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.